Welcome back. It's the Internet Advisor, Foster Brown, Cal Carson, and Tom Lawrence in studios. Okay, guys. So we're going to go back and take a little trip down memory lane. What was the first phone, mobile phone that you ever had?
The Kyocera, the old candy bar one. I can't remember the model number of them, but they about the size of a Snickers bar, so they used to call them the candy bar phones.
When was that? Well, about late 90s?
Oh, yeah, 90s, yeah.
Okay, that was late 90s. Cal?
A Motorola flip phone with the auxiliary battery on the back that made it about 2.5 inches thick.
Well, I can go back to 1973 when, now, this was a mobile phone, technically, okay, but it was a bag phone that I carried. I was working for a construction company at the time.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my
so
God.
I had to be out in the field, but they did things like they had to drill a hole in my trunk in order to put in the whip antenna. And then when I would get on it, you know, first of all, you were signing in. There was an operator, like in the old days when they used to have, you know, the headsets and they were plugging things in.
Oh, yeah.
And they may have been doing that, for all I know. But I would call in, and this was 3480 calling the base. And they would then connect me with, you know, whoever it was that I wanted. But that was 1973.
You know, I'm going to have to correct myself. I just thought about it because that flip phone was not my first phone because I did have a bag phone. Not quite as big as yours, but it was a Samsung phone. It was 5 watts, and it came in a bag that you carried around about the size of, I don't know, a small women's clutch. It was about this.
Yes.
As I'm holding it up to the mic.
Was it tethered with a cord or was it loose?
It was loose.
Yeah.
And it had a little, you would set it down on the
exactly.
table.
Exactly. You stand it up, right? Exactly.
You pick up the headset, you dial off the headset, and it had a little flip-up antenna that was about 6 inches tall.
Yep.
And it
yep.
weighed, oh, I don't know, 10 pounds?
But
that
man.
Was in the world of NiCad batteries, where if you didn't charge those suckers right after a while, they'd remember, gee, he only charged me halfway last time, so instead of being an hour battery, now I'm 30 minutes.
And then if you forget, memory effect of those.
Yeah,
they're awful.
And if you forgot again and go, oh, he only charged me 15 minutes, I guess I'm a 15-minute battery now. And then 2 weeks later, you're back at the Samsung store, can I have another battery for this thing?
So, well, yeah. along the way to the phones that you have right now, we'll get to that to find out whether they're Android or Apple phones. But along the way, did you have any favorites, Tom?
You know, I loved the Palm series of phones.
Yes.
I was so
the
happy
trios?
With those. Yes.
Oh, I love them.
I love that phone. That was a great phone. You know, they were really reliable. I can't hardly ever remember having to reboot them or anything.
You're right.
And they had a lot of functionality on them.
Oh,
and
huge.
My sister still has hers.
Really?
Yes. She still has the old Trio. It still works because it works on the same Verizon. And what we've done is my sister doesn't like technology that much. She's an artist, and she likes the things she has. So we've bought 3 of them off eBay for her. So she's got them laying around. And as they die, she just grabs another one, activates it. She's still got one left before we got to buy another one off eBay.
Now Palm sold out to a company called Handspring.
Yes.
That's right. Yes, for a while.
And I had a Handspring handheld that I used, and I found out from my carrier that Sprint had a module that you plugged into the back of the Handspring, and it became a cell phone. And I still have that sitting in my basement right now. So I had a Handspring that was kind of fun. So I had the all the advantages of a Palm Pilot and a cell phone joined together.
Would you go backwards to some of the facets of that technology?
No, I'm good. I really like where the technology is headed. Yeah. I'm all in on the future stuff.
Yeah.
I'm at the point where I think we've gotten big enough for a phone. Because I remember it used to be the phones were really huge, and they got small, 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 small. Now they got big.
Yeah,
big,
that's
big.
True.
You
that is true, yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah.
You know? But I like the functionalities of the phones of today. But I don't necessarily need anything bigger than what I'm carrying already.
Where do you think we're heading with the phones?
They're going to be more the all-purpose device. We're seeing Samsung with their new project they have, allowing you to connect it directly to a screen. They have a dock they sell, and you actually dock your phone connected to a screen, mouse, keyboard.
You know, I really think that we just use the terminology incorrect. We carry handheld computers.
We do.
That That's just true. Happen to have a phone feature in it.
Yes, the new ones have 3 or 4 gigs of RAM in them. I mean, that's rivaling what my laptop has in a small handheld device.
And when you sit down and think about it, you really, how often do you really see people using the phone as a phone?
Well, I hardly ever use it for that.
You see them, yeah, you see them use it, but you know, on occasion, stuff like that. But they do, you know, most of it, in the course of a day, if you looked at all the function you did with this device, you probably didn't talk on it.
Now, you have a Bluetooth phone in your ear.
I have a Bluetooth receiver in my ear. That is correct.
Yeah, so you really don't need the device to be your phone, do you? The iPhone that you carry.
Well, you have to have the phone in order to the Bluetooth.
I agree, but you really don't have to have. You don't have to have that
you
in.
You mean
hand.
I don't have to talk? Have to
exactly.
have it in my hand and talk to.
Right.
No, with the combination of Siri, the phone numbers that are already in my address book, and the Bluetooth, I just punch it. Siri dial Foster, and Siri dials Foster for me, and I talk to him. And when I'm done, I punch the Bluetooth one more time, and I hang up.
Hmm. See, I have a feeling that we are. One of the things I've seen around is a proliferation of these wireless earbuds.
Yes.
And they're getting better and better. You know, the Apple one still looks kind of silly. Pardon me.
Yeah.
Sticking out of it. You know, it's like. What? Have you got a disease? Is something dripping out of your ear? It
little
looks
comment,
awful.
He is not wearing an Apple one, by the way.
Not yet.
No.
At our Mac group meeting next month,
maybe.
We're giving that away as grand prize.
Oh, I gotta come.
So I think if you won them, you wouldn't mind looking silly.
No. Not at all.
Yeah, they're a little pricey for my blood, but I mean, if I won a pair, I'd stick one in my ear.
About $300 seems to be the average point for the calling them wearables now. Do you have any favorite ones?
You know, I have the Plantronics, and I've been a huge fan of the Plantronics. When I worked in corporate IT, we all had the Plantronics headsets for our dispatcher
and things like that.
And I bought early on some of their early Bluetooth stuff, and it's outstanding. So I've got one of their small in-ear units, and I love it. It works.
Oh, it works just in-ear.
Yeah, they make some top quality. It has three microphones on it, two of them to cancel ambient noise around. So when I talk, even if I'm in the wind, you can hear me speaking.
No kidding.
Oh, it's wonderful.
Yeah. Plantronics makes great stuff. Jabra makes some pretty good stuff.
Yes.
And then there's one other brand that doesn't come to me right now, but they make good stuff too.
LG makes some good ones. I actually have the LG Tones for the Bluetooth headsets, and theirs are pretty good, nice stuff too.
Yeah. I'm trying to look up the one wearable I saw. They're really beautiful. They're beautiful. They're like a black, and they fit in your ear. Oh shoot.
But
they're absolutely tiny.
Yeah, but you got to watch out when you're carrying, when you're using those suckers, especially if you have them in both ears, because you have to be aware of your surroundings. And if you get trapped into listening to that and there's a fire engine coming by or something like that, it's important to be able to hear.
Don't they have wearables, you know, that let you be aware of that as well?
Well, if you know kids that crank them up and they're listening to their music, they have no idea what's going on with the world.
That happens. Yes, absolutely.
I've reached up and just pulled them out of my daughter's ears a couple times.
Oh, that's cruel, Dad.
It's attention getting.
Hey, let's take a break. And when we come back, let's talk about some more of the devices that are out there that people may be looking at for Christmas and some things that have struck you that, you know, you're looking at maybe getting hold of yourself, like these little earbuds that I'm looking at myself and haven't got the money for. No, I'm not going to take a loan out. Welcome back. It's the Internet Advisor, and we've got a great roundtable going here with Cal Carson, Foster Brown, and Tom Lawrence. And guys, I thought we'd swing our focus. We talk about wearables and phones. You have the Plantronic wearables, right? The ear ones. Where do you think that's heading? I mean, the reason, tell you why I asked that question. It seems that if you buy into one kind of technology, very shortly, another one takes over that.
The voice interactiveness is where we're really moving.
Okay.
Yes, that's the
that's the key.
Service integration. Now, picture this, and Google demoed this at their latest when they released a new Pixel phone, and they released some of the integrations they're doing. One of them was saying, "All right, I want a sandwich from this store," and it says, "Here's the menu. Which kind would you like?" So you can actually start an interactive order by asking your assistant, "Say, hey, find the nearest restaurant," and then some of these restaurants have integrations with Google that allow them to. You can place your order. I want a Subway $5 footlong. all right, which and have it ready at the nearest Subway. And now you've never talked to a person. You didn't go to a website. You talked to your phone and told it what you wanted, and then it lets you know, and your sandwich should be ready in 15 minutes.
Wow.
Pizza places are looking at this too, where you can simply go on there, order a pizza, and not actually have to interact with someone. So it just comes up on a screen to them, and they send you the pizza.
So if you're investing in future technology, it sounds like you would say, keep your eye out for these, like the Amazon.
Yes.
What's it called?
Well, you have the Amazon Echo, and you have the then you have the Google Home, which is their version. They're competing.
A lot of ads for that on TV now.
A lot of it on.
They are really going after that market.
Yes.
You know, I'm thinking more. The next step is going to be more implants. A lot of people, you know, they shake their heads about it. But you know something, I would welcome the ability to have. Where I wouldn't have to put my Bluetooth in every day when I get ready to go to work and stuff like that. Just have it permanently installed in the head so that you could always use it that way.
Hmm. Yes. There's a few people, actually. Gabe Newell, who is of Valve Software, one of the largest software companies out there, he's actually done a lot of exploring on what they refer to as wetware, which is the integration of technology into people. And he's an interesting guy because he's not your average human there. He's someone who's he's actually quite accomplished in the market. And so he's looking at some of those ideas. So yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people looking at it.
It may seem a little Borgish, but I think it's going to be a good idea to do.
We thought the Borg was going to, you know, come and take us. We're just going to turn ourselves into it.
Oh, sure. Save him a trip.
We'll save him a trip. We already got the implants.
Yeah.
Connect us to your network.
I mean, you think about it, it's going to make sense eventually anyway, because, for example, they have that, you can get that new bio tool that they have that can check your heart rate. And do your electrocardiograms with and it talks to your phone and sends it back to your doctor. Well, I think it's going to get to a point where you're just going to be able to have all that stuff in you, and you just Bluetooth your phone, boom, it sends it to them, you're good to go.
Yes, there's a lot of that going on. There's a group of hackers that have really been working on the diabetes project, and it's about creating artificial pancreases and constant feedback. One of my friends is actually involved in that because he's insulin-dependent diabetic who's also a hacker. So he's very interested in working on this, and he's been active in some of these projects. So we're going to see more of that constant telemetry, and it's neat because it can tell him things in real time. Some of the test devices they have, not FDA-approved, but they're going through processes. And it's really interesting. That's going to be another thing. If we can have a system that monitors us all the time and lets the doctor know, hey, you've had a little bit too much salt.
Yeah.
Wasn't Google doing something with contact lenses that could take your blood sugar? Was it?
That was the concept of it, is being able to measure blood sugar by contact lenses and also the other future stuff is projecting things onto them so you can have an overlay, because augmented reality is where that's really going. Because you have VR and AR. So VR is really cool, but it's immersive.
Virtual
reality. And I don't know what's going on around me. I've locked myself in this thing, something over my eyes, and it's kind of scary because you could walk up behind me. Augmented reality, I have a million and one uses myself for it. We've seen a lot of cool demos. I've got to demo that at Microsoft. You put on the glasses, I still see you, but now I have overlays of information. And I'm hard with people's names. And I could just picture such a good use of it like tells me all your latest things, times, you know, I can just like an overlay. And you think I know everything about you.
Owes me $50, you know, kind of thing.
wouldn't have to do it the old way, because I remember one time I was involved with a sales organization, and the chairman of that organization, I was at a convention, and he walked by me, and I walked by him. He says, "How you doing?" I said, "I'm doing fine." He says, "Well, I'll see you later, Cal." And I go like, and I looked, and I mean, this guy must meet like 10,000 people a day. I'm like, how does he know my name? So I said, "Hey, wait, Rich, I got to ask you a question. I got to know, how did you know my name?" He goes, "Oh, it's a system I've been working on for years and years and years, and I've got it perfected now." I go, "Really? Tell me about it. Can I learn it?" Because he goes, "It's real easy to learn." He goes, "When I walk by you, I just looked at the name tag on your shirt." He said, "Until I did that, I had no idea who you were."
And when you said, "Hey, Rich," were you reading his name tag?
No, I knew who
he was. You knew who he was, yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, he stood out, of course. But, you know, but I'm just one in the multitude of millions.
Yeah.
But it was a lot of fun.
So if you're going to be investing your money in your own personal technology, then you would invest it in what?
Ooh, that's always a tough one. Looking at some of these people coming up with some of the new ideas and how they can use augmented technology. Actually, I was just at a startup pitch last week for in Detroit, and someone has one for golf, some augmented technology to help understand your golf game better. So there's plenty of things it just hasn't been applied to yet. So
yeah, I mean, like even Apple has already started theirs with IKEA. And so, like, if
yes.
Yeah, so on your phone, you can go to the IKEA catalog and take a picture of a chair. Mm-hmm. And, gee, what does that look like in my room? And you bring up your camera on your phone, and you hit another button, and now the chair's sitting in your room, and you can move that chair around.
No.
So you can fill your entire room
with virtual furniture.
IKEA's virtual furniture and say, yep, that's what it looks like.
No.
And then just start ordering it off the phone.
Yes. I had no idea.
Oh, yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
and that's where Qualcomm comes in. So Qualcomm just announced their latest line of their Snapdragon processors, which is Qualcomm runs the majority of the processors in the flagship phones, and they have a big enhancement of new stuff for that augmented reality because they realize the phone's going to be the easiest access. We aren't all going to run around wearing goggles because it kind of looks ridiculous and expensive,
right.
And we haven't figured out a practical way to make them, but we're all holding a phone.
Yep.
So add the feature in a phone. There's a camera on one side, a big screen, and I drag the chair where I want it, and I can furnish my room, and I can see it in... You know, it's going to change the purchasing experience.
Staying on the subject for just a little bit, folks, I was watching a TED Talk that had just come out. A young woman who was a surgeon was giving a talk, and she had some demonstrations behind her on a screen of augmented reality and surgery.
Yes.
Where the person who is helping the surgeon is at a distance. But now not just kind of talking to him, and show, he can actually get his hands in there and show, like, for instance, he was showing where to cut on a tumor or where to cut on a knee. And matter of fact, they actually did do the cut and then showed the inside of the knee and things like that with augmented reality. It's absolutely mind-boggling.
Yes.
And if you've ever seen the Good Doctor series, the last, either the last or the second last of the series episodes, they had a scene in which two of the surgeons are holding a heart, but they both have got the mask, the headgear on, and then they're manipulating this heart and trying to go through certain scenarios to see which one will work. That kind of thing, I don't think, is TV pretend. This isn't Star Trek we're watching.
Ford is right now using it as a design tool for their cars. They have the engineers will do that. So instead of having to build these massive prototype cars, they can move the mirrors around. It's so enhanced when they can climb into a car and say, what does the rearview mirror look like? It's here. What if we change the angles of things? So it's not just the car they're changing. It's the position of things in real time. So they can just have a shell of a car and enhance everything around it. So now you've cut production time or cut engineering time to get to production because you've thought out all these things without having a prototype.
All right, yep. I want to get back to where would you spend your money if you're thinking ahead, and let's think in terms of computers. Would you go for laptop? What would you go for at this time? A tablet? One of these ones that they call hybrids? Where would you invest your money?
Ooh.
It all depends. See, it goes back to the magical question. What are you going to do with that computer?
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
You know, because I have both a laptop and a desktop.
Mm-hmm.
And I have different uses for each one of them. Matter of fact, I'm setting up my new desktop now, which is an iMac. It's a 27-inch screen on it. It's beautiful, and I love it. But I do different things on my desktop than what I do on my laptop. And because of that, then my directions are different on what I would look for in a laptop and what I look for in a desktop.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah, and because I don't really game, so my laptop is not very powerful. Matter of fact, what I wanted was it's got the full high 1080 screen, but in a 13-inch package. It's lightweight, and I get about 8 to 10 hours of battery life. That's actually what matters.
Okay.
I take it places like it's sitting here for doing my show notes. But my desktop is a monster with three huge monitors and a wraparound. It's a really enhanced setup because I do all my editing and creative work for my video work and YouTube and everything else. So that is a liquid-cooled monster of a computer. It's part of my office. It's not in my office. It is part of my office.
It's interesting you mention that because I am running into a certain problem. I have a MacBook Pro, and I have 16 gigabytes of RAM on here. It's one of the newer ones. It's a year old. It's 2016. The problem I'm having is that when I do audio editing on it, it is really slow taking my edits and reproducing. I expected it to go zip, zip, and be done. I don't know what the problem is. I don't know.
Of course,
know.
It all can matter on a bunch of things. Number one, do you have the latest version of that software?
Yes.
Number two, maybe you need more RAM in there.
Than 16?
Well, yeah, it depends what you're doing with it. I mean, are you only doing editing, or are you doing other things while you're doing editing?
Well, a significant amount of the work I do on this is editing. It's work.
Yeah, yep. Or then maybe the bottom line might be, I don't know, maybe the processors that are in the laptops don't have enough spunk as opposed to the processor in a desktop.
Okay, like this, I believe, is an i3.
There you go. You just
didn't say
i7. For us.
Okay, now that is part, I think, of what when people go to buy computers, they find really confusing. I'm sorry, I have an i5 core, 2.9 gigahertz i5, but still, that's not
right.
Perhaps gutsy enough to do that kind of video audio editing.
Go full i7.
And, okay, when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about that whole business of the CPU and how important that is and what size, et cetera, you ought to
have
as we go on. And we'll wrap things up, I think. We're coming up to wrapping things up here on the Internet Advisor. Well, this has been a fun ride. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I have. Our roundtable here. We got a taste of it last week, and I decided we'd try it again this week. And Cal Carson, thank you very much for being here and for doing all your great work with the board there.
Where else can I have so much fun for so little money?
So very little money. And thank you very much, Tom Lawrence, for being here. Well, let's tell folks again where your shop is.
So I'm Tom Lawrence, owner of Lawrence Systems or Lawrence Technology Services. You can Google it both ways and find me. We're over in Southgate, Michigan.
And the URL for your site is?
We're online at lawrencesystems.com.
lawrencesystems.com.
So, well, if you need any sort of IT situations, both big and small.
Big and small. We have, and if you just want the scale of our projects, click around on there. You'll go to our blog, and you can see all kinds of fun stuff we do.
Yep. You're doing some video projects now. A lot of video projects now.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun.
Now, is that the video for your clients or your own video? Own videos.
It's mostly our own video. We don't do we're getting into doing a little bit more for some of our clients. We're actually going to be launching a new company in January that's going to be focused on more of that called LTS Creative. So we're going to split it off because it seems weird to have an IT company that gets in production, but we spend so much time producing. They see a lot of the stuff we produce and go, can you do that for me? And I'm like, well, we never thought of it as a business model exactly. So we've turned it into one. So that's something we're expanding into.
Great. I'm delighted to hear that. It sounds like things are up and running and on the way, and you also have a podcast. Don't be modest. Tell us about that.
Oh, yeah. We've got the podcast, the Sunday Morning Linux Review. So if you like deep technical dives into Linux and geeking out with me and a few co-hosts, it's a lot of fun.
What time Sunday morning is that up?
7 a.m.
Ooh-wee.
Just before you hit that pew? Find out what you have to do.
And you're also part of the Podcast Detroit. .com network.
Yeah, we hang out with Bob and Dave and the IT&ED guys. They're great.
And you can find, by the way, any information about Tom there at the Podcast Detroit site. Great site. And that's where we are as well.
Fun, we should probably put a link on our website, internetadvisor.net, to the Lawrence website as well.
We certainly will.
I appreciate that.
That is going to be part of my job once I finish the program here. The beat goes on. This program never ends for me. It keeps on going all week long.
Well, it'll keep you out of trouble.
Oh, definitely. Hey, okay, before we got to the break, I was talking about my computer and not quite getting all the performance out of it I wanted, and I told you what I was doing, a lot of audio editing, and I have a i5.
i5.
Is the processor I have. Let's talk a little bit about processors. Hang on, folks. Don't go away yet, because I want to see if we can demystify this a little bit about what these processors are and how important it is to buy a processor, that certain kind of processor with a computer I'm getting, depending on what I'm doing. We start with that premise.
Yes.
What is it you're doing if you're just, surfing the internet and, watching a few videos on there? It's, in other words, rather modest use of it. You're not going to need a lot of heavy equipment for lifting.
Right.
Those would be your i3 people.
Yep.
if we're talking Intel processors, and that gets into another game because you have Intel and AMD.
Yes.
But we'll do Intel right now. If you need more information about AMD, we can figure out a way to cross-reference.
Yeah.
But if you're just a casual user, you just use the machine every now and then, you're doing mostly email, surfing the web, maybe writing some word processing, stuff like that, an i3 processor is going to be just fine for you.
Right.
But before I go any further, I just have to say this because I'm doing it ahead of myself, and that is this. When you buy a computer, you should always buy the most amount of memory, the most amount of hard drive space, the largest screen, and the fastest processor that you can afford.
Okay.
So if you can afford an i5, then do an i5. If you can afford an i3 only, do an i3 only. But you should do the one you can most afford. i3 is your entry level. That's where you want to do those casual things we just talked about.
Right.
i5, I call that mid-level. And i7, I would say, is high level.
Yes.
Would you like to expand on that?
Go i9.
Uh-oh.
What? I didn't know there was.
Yes. Intel decided that there's the power user, and then there's the super power user, so now they have the i9s. It's to compete with the other company, AMD, who also came up with one. I like the name of it. They call it the Threadripper. Sounds cool. And what we're seeing is there's the power users, you know, people who are in the creative space. If you're making a lot of things, if you're editing audio, or you're playing the games, or editing video, you really just it can never be fast enough.
I've got to stop you. We need to talk about the AMD Intel thing, because that can be a price difference. If I don't know if it still is, but at one point in time, the AMD cost less.
It is still a price difference, and it's still that the AMD cost less. And if you look on any website and you start looking at a bunch of computers, start comparing them side by side, if you see an AMD and an Intel, and they're running at the same gigahertz pretty much, the AMD is always going to be cheaper. Mm-hmm. I have not seen it to be the other way around.
Why is that?
AMD's, that's kind of been their market, is to be able to be a little bit less expensive than them and try to work on some more innovative designs. Actually, that's one of the reasons why, if anyone ever wondered, we have x86, which we also heard Intel.
Yes.
And then the other one is the AMD 64 standard, but Intel supports it because AMD was the more innovative company when it came to the 64-bit versions.
Oh.
So we call it, even though it's confusing if people are looking at software, because actually if they put the right nomenclature on it, it's called AMD X64, and that's because they were the inventors of some of that, though. They won out that kind of battle, but Intel had to make compatible processors because things are 64-bit now.
The other thing about when you're buying a computer, if you buy the most that you can afford at that particular time, it gives you better performance.
Yes.
And if you decide that you know something, maybe I want to go get that i9 that he talked about.
Mm-hmm.
It gives you greater resale on that particular computer. Not a huge amount, but it does give you greater resale, so that if you want to sell that off as a used computer, someone's more likely to pick up a i5 or an i7 than they would an i3, because an i3 in a used computer, heck, for the amount of money, you add another $100, you can buy a brand new i3 or even maybe even an i5.
Let me wrap this up on you. The magic word, used.
Mm-hmm.
Is it wise to buy a used computer, or should you only buy a refurbished?
Well, fine line there. You got to look and see if they put any new parts. So did the high wear part, i.e. the hard drive, was it replaced? A lot of the refurbishers, when we refurbish laptops, we put new hard drives in them because that's the most likely thing to break. So as long as they're good. Also, make sure you're buying certain things from certain places, as in high quality used ones. When the way I identify that is, you look for commercial brands, like the Lenovo sitting in front of me. Off-lease commercial equipment is great. The used $199 special that was on sale at the big box store a year later, it's barely worth the $199 when it was bought. A year later, the hinges are wobbly. It's not the same.
Right. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. The business line equipment, like Dell Latitudes and HP Elites, those are good brands to watch for.
The other thing, too, is that if you happen to cross over on the Apple side of the fence, if that person has Apple Care on that computer, which is for 3 years, it is transferable. And if you bought that computer used, that computer is fully covered for the duration of that warranty that's on there.
Okay.
So I would pay price for an Apple an Apple computer that's covered with Apple Care with no problem at all, because if it goes bad, I walk into an Apple store and they fix it.
Quick last question: would you buy off of Craigslist?
Ooh.
I have. And
yeah.
I have, and I wouldn't have a problem with doing that.
Yeah. Make sure you pick a safe
careful.
Meeting place. Yeah. Don't if someone says, bring $5,000 and meet me at this dark corner.
The best way to do it, if you can check with most of your municipalities, they'll tell you, meet at the police station.
Yep. Right.
Yep. Not
right.
a problem. If they bug off, you pretty much clear.
Yeah, criminals off. Definitely do not want to meet you there.
Well, guys, this has been a hoot. Thank you so much for being with me here on the Internet Advisor and making us another great weekend. And, folks, I hope you're enjoying it as well. Don't forget, if you check in with us on Sunday nights, that's when I post the edited version of this podcast. And we are available as well on the Podcast Detroit Network, where you'll find Tom Lawrence and his Linux program as well. Lots of good stuff there. Have a great weekend, folks, and we'll see you back with the Internet Advisor.
You've been listening to the Internet Advisor Show.